My name is Clint. It's good to have you guys today on this Mother's Day. So I'm going to start with a story this morning. I don't know which stories I tell and I don't tell, so if I've told it before, then you'll have to just pretend like you have never heard it, and you can laugh if you want to. When I was in middle school, my younger sister and I, Kendall, her name is Kendall, she's a couple years younger than I, we had the church we were a part of was doing this like little children's performance thingy, whatever. And we had practice one day. It was in the summertime. It was really hot. I'm from Indiana. And my parents were both at work, and so the youth leaders were going to take us home after we were done with our practice. And on the way home, my sister and I, because it was really hot, we devised a plan, because the people that were taking us home, they had a swimming pool. And we said, listen, Kendall, we've got to figure out a way to not be able to get into the house so that we can go swimming at their house rather than going in our house. And so we're on the raid home, and we devised this plan that we kept a key behind our house underneath the deck for when we would go home and just to get into the house. We said, let's pretend and tell them that the key is not out so that we can do this. And so Kendall and I get out of the van, and we run around the back, and I put my hand under there, and sure enough, the key's right there. And I'm like, okay, Kendall, we're going to tell Mr. and Mrs. Lindsay that the key's not out. And not only was the key out, but our back door screen door was unlocked as well. Someone had forgot to lock it. So we had two ways to get into the house. But we were so excited because we wanted to go back because we knew our parents were at work. We wanted to go swimming. And the other thing we really wanted to do, which we can't ever do at our house, is I wanted to eat Lucky Charms. Right? And this family ate Lucky Charms, and we never got Lucky Charms. Right? So we devised this plan. We lied to our friends' parents. And they said, well, I guess you'll have to go back to our house, and you guys can just swim and hang out until your parents get off work to get you. So sure enough, we got back to their house. We went swimming. I had Lucky Charms. And for that, like, 2 hours, it was awesome, right? Until my mom came over. And she knew very well that we had lied. And I had to stand there in front of my friend's parents, Kendall and I did, and tell them to their face, we lied to you so that we could eat Lucky Charms and go swimming. And it was a terrible feeling, you know. And the only beautiful thing about, not beautiful, the only good thing about that story is that my mom was so gracious not to tell my dad, because we would have definitely got spanked if my dad found out. She says, you're going to get in trouble, but it's just, I'm not going to tell your dad. But I'll never forget that story, because I remember the first time I can really remember. I know I lied probably more than once in my life. It was the first time in my life I think I really remember devising a plan to lie to get something out of it that I wanted, right? And that's the lead-in to today's topic. We are walking through the Ten Commandments, and we're on number 9, so we're almost done. We've been going at this for a while now. But the 9th commandment of the Ten Commandments in Exodus chapter 20, verse 16 says, you shall not bear false witness against your neighbor. And I'm going to hopefully get to the point where you see how lying falls underneath that. But the command is, you shall not bear false witness against your neighbor. Now, the original context and intent of this law primarily was for when accusations were brought up against people in the court of Israel, or the community of the people of Israel. In that time, there was no video or DNA evidence to corroborate one's accusations against someone else. Right? The only thing you could go on was the testimony of somebody saying that you did something wrong. Right? There were the convictions and accusations were based only, or largely at least, on someone's word and testimony. That's why in the Old Testament, and even in the New Testament, you see that it had to be established based on the testimony of 2 or 3 people. You couldn't just have one person saying, I saw this person do this. You had to have at least 2 or 3 people to bring witness to something for them to be then charged with a crime. In Deuteronomy chapter 19, it says, one witness is not enough to convict anyone accused of any crime or offense they may have committed. A matter must be established by the testimony of 2 or 3 witnesses. Now, the purpose of this command, then, was to protect the innocent people from facing judgment for a crime they did not commit or an untrue accusation. That's the purpose, to protect the community of Israel. Right? If, matter of fact, if a witness, if someone brought charges or said, I witnessed something, and they were not telling the truth about what they witnessed, they were the ones that got punished. with the very punishment that this person would have got if they would have been found guilty. Right, that's what it says in Deuteronomy 19, verses 18. If the witness proves to be a liar, giving false testimony against a fellow Israelite, then do to the false witness as that witness intended to do to the other party. You must purge the evil from among you. Right. So if there is this, if I saw something, if I say I saw something that didn't really happen, and that offense brought the death penalty, but then by me bringing false testimony, I would get the very sentence that they would have got if they were guilty. Right? That's how big of a rule this was, or a command this was, in the community of Israel to protect people from being unjustly condemned. Right? See, what the Ten Commandments forbid, when we look at the Ten Commandments, is the most extreme form of any particular sin. For example, murder is the worst kind of breaking the sixth command. But we know that anger is also a sin, and that's at the root of murder, right? Adultery is the worst kind or worst way of violating the seventh command, but we know that lusting in your heart is a sin as well, right? It's the root of it. Right? And in the same way with this command, giving false testimony is the worst way of breaking the ninth command because it puts the life or the reputation of an innocent person at risk. Right? It threatens the entire community. But the underlying principle of this is to encompasses all levels of falsehood. Right? It encompasses everything. Right? The ninth command both forbids falsehood of any kind. It forbids us from lying in any way, shape, or form. But it doesn't just forbid us from lying. It requires that we tell the truth in all situations. It's two sides of the same coin. It's not just don't lie, but also tell the truth. Right? It's not just don't lie, but it's also be honest. Right? So today, in this day and age, we don't find ourselves having to stand as witnesses in a courtroom setting too often anymore. Maybe you have before, but most of us don't find ourselves in a courtroom setting. But that doesn't mean we aren't regularly in a position each day to obey or disobey the ninth command of not lying. All right, just think about that. We are confronted every day, I think, with opportunities to tell the truth or to lie, just blatant lies, right? When you don't want to get in trouble by your parents or at work or with your boss, we're confronted with the option to lie or not lie, right? When you don't want to, or when you want to avoid a conflict with your spouse, you're tempted to lie or not lie. I'm going to be honest with you this week. I lied to my wife, right? I was in the kitchen. I was getting ready to make my breakfast. And she's like, hey, did you wash your hands before you started making your breakfast? And I'm like, because I had not. I'd done it. And I'm like, yes. I said yes. And I'm like, oh, my gosh, you know. And like 10 seconds later, I come back out and go, actually, babe, I forgot to wash. I usually do that, but I forgot to wash my hands this morning. She looked at me. She said, so you lied to me. And I'm like, ah, yes, I did. I'm so sorry, right? Like, but I thought that avoiding that by just lying would be easier, and it actually was worse, right? I should have just told the truth in the first place. I'm sorry if you have a higher opinion of me, and that's shattered the glass of how you see me, right? We lie when you're asked. I think oftentimes in church, you walk in the door, man, how's it going? Oh, great, great, everything's great. And it's just a flat-out lie because life is really hard or you're really in a tough spot. But we lie about it, right? We lie when we're hypocrites or hypocritical. When we say we're going to do something, but then we don't do it. Or we say we're not going to do something, and then we do it, right? Jesus says, listen, let your yes be your yeses and your no be your no. Be a person of integrity. I think oftentimes when we say we're going to do something and then we don't do it, that's a form of lying. It's a form of falsehood. We lie when we tell little half-truths or little lies. When we only tell parts of the story that make us look good or justify us, but we don't share the other parts that make us look bad or condemn us or convict us. We just share the part that we think will make people look at us in the right kind of lens. Right? We lie when we use flattery. right? Excessive praise, or in slang terms, kiss and butt, right? To further your interest or your agenda. And we shatter some, we throw all this excessive praise that we're not really honest about just to look good to someone or to get something out of it. We lie, we have falsehood when we gossip and slander. Gossip means spreading a rumor that isn't true or confirmed, or giving someone else information that's really none of their business. That's gossip. Slander is deliberately passing along what is false to damage someone else's reputation or character. It's a form of falsehood. We lie when we spread falsehood when we're misleading with our comments. When we twist someone's words, we spin the truth. We take something that someone has said and we take it out of context so that we look good or we look right and the other person looks bad or they look wrong, so that we can look like the victim, so that someone will have sympathy for me. And we twist people's words to get that kind of attention. Right? We lie when we blame shift, when we blame someone else for something that we have done wrong. I've practiced physical therapy for 16 years. One time in my life, I dropped a patient, right? And it happened a handful of months ago. I was in on a rehab unit, and it was a patient who had suffered a stroke. It was 100% my fault. I was on the wrong side of the patient. They had a higher level of assistance that I was in the wrong position. And once they stood up, they went down. I controlled them down, but it was a fall nonetheless. And it was my fault, right? But I was very tempted that moment because there's some things on the whiteboard. We have a whiteboard in each patient's room that communicates like handoffs and levels of assist, and it needed to be some edits to it. But I could have blamed it on that. But ultimately, it was my fault. And I remember I told the patient, I told the patient's wife, I told the nurse, like, the long story short, that was my fault. I was on the wrong side. I just wasn't in the right position. He ended up being fine, and I didn't get in trouble, but I mean, I was so, like, I was humiliated, I was mad, I was everything in between, but I just knew that in that moment I was tempted to, like, what's this going to say about my integrity and my character right now? Right? But we're tempted in those moments to lie, to not tell the truth. Lastly, we lie when we're silent. We lie when someone else is gossiping or speaking negatively about someone else around us and we don't say anything about it. Or we join into it. Someone else gets in trouble for our mistake and we don't speak up. Or someone else gets credit for something, we get credit for something someone else is due and we don't give appropriate credit to who where credit is deserved. All forms of falsehood. Right, the big idea is that what we say or don't say matters. Right? Words matter. Whether we speak them or we write them on social media or texting or emails, words matter. And it's very easy to be careless with our words and just speak things that maybe aren't true or are not meant to be spoken, and we're just careless with our tongues at times. Now, the reality of our words, right, is that words reveal the character of our heart, because words come out of what's in our heart. Jesus says in Matthew chapter, this isn't on the screen, this is in Matthew chapter 12. If you want to look at it, you can. In Matthew chapter 12, Jesus says this. He says, either make the tree good in verse 33 and its fruit good, or make the tree bad and its fruit bad. For the tree is known by its fruit. You brood of vipers, how can you, being evil, speak what is good? For the mouth speaks out of that which fills the heart. The good man brings out of his good treasure what is good, and the evil man brings out of his evil treasure what is evil. But I tell you that every careless word that people speak, they shall give an accounting for in the day of judgment. For by your words you will be justified, and by your words you will be condemned. Our words matter. They can justify us, or they can condemn us. This author that I read, Jen Wilson, says, if we neglect to bear truthful witness, as the ninth word commands, our words will bear witness against us in the day of reckoning. We are so careless at times with what we speak. And what we say, if we're careless, gets us in trouble. It's hard to take back. Right, careless words are not only a reflection, or our words are not only a reflection of our character, but careless words like lies and dishonesty, they break the fabric of relationships, of trust that's required for a relationship. Right? You cannot have a trusting relationship and have lies be a part of that. If you can't be honest, your level of relationship is only going to go to a certain degree. Ephesians 4 says, therefore, each of you must put off falsehood and speak truthfully to your neighbor, for we are all members of one body. Right? Not telling the truth is a very unloving thing to do. This is one of the biggest things I try to teach my children. Rachel and I try to teach our kids is that, listen, if you do something wrong, there's going to be reality. There's going to be consequences that come with that. But if you lie to me about it and I have to find out later, then we've broken trust required for a healthy relationship. If you do something wrong and you tell me you did something wrong and you own up to it, there might still be consequences, but the trust isn't shattered as much, right? And that's going to go a lot longer way than if you lie to me and you don't tell me the truth. Trust is required, marriage, family, friendship, ministry, whatever. And if we don't have trust because of lies, the relationship just can't get any deeper, right? It breaks the fabric of trust required for relationship. And lastly, careless words, lies, deceit, gossip, slandering, misleading comments, ultimately careless words, they hurt people deeply. Right, Proverbs 15 says, gentle words are a tree of life. A deceitful tongue crushes the spirit. Proverbs 26 says, a lying tongue hates those it hurts, and a flattering mouth works ruin. Right, the purpose of the ninth command is what? To protect marriages, to protect relationships, to protect reputation, to protect friendship by telling the truth, by sharing in honest conversation with one another. Right, Rachel and I, my wife and I, are as we grow in marriage and get better at marriage and try to do marriage healthier all the time, like one thing that we have tried to work on recently is to stop saying you always or you never to one another. Because A, those are not true statements. Like, I'm always not stonewalling. I stonewall a lot, but I'm not always doing it. I'm getting better. And she's always not controlling. She can struggle with controlling, but she doesn't always do that. So for me to say, you're always so controlling, that's A, untrue, and B, it's hurtful. And for her to say to me, you always stonewall, you always walk away from something or whatever, that's not true, and it's hurtful. Right, we're working on not using certain statements that are not truthful and that can be hurtful. Right, careless words, they reflect our heart, they break the fabric of trust required for relationships, and they can hurt each other deeply. But I think the question I want to ask this morning more than anything else is, what lies at the root of why we lie? Right, because we've talked about the last few weeks, at the root of murder is anger. And at the root of adultery is lust. Right? What is at the root of why we lie? Jesus gives, I think, he tells us all the truth, and so we can see all of our answers from Jesus, but he gives this this scathing rebuke to the religious leaders in John chapter 8 that I think sheds some light on the root of why we lie. He says to the religious leaders in John chapter 8, you belong to your father, the devil, and you want to carry out your father's desires. He was a murderer from the beginning, not holding to the truth, for there is no truth in him. When he lies, he speaks his native tongue, for he is a liar and a father of lies. The only thing the devil can do is lie. He has no ability to tell the truth. The only thing the devil can do is lie to you, right? Now, it's interesting because in the garden, Adam and Eve are commanded, you can eat from all the vegetation and the plants, just don't eat from that tree of the knowledge of good and evil. And what does the enemy do? The enemy lies to Adam and Eve and says, you will not die. Surely your eyes will be open and you will be like God. God doesn't want you to do that, so he commanded you not to eat. He lies to them. And when Adam and Eve buy into that lie or believe that lie, and God finds them in after they've eaten and now they feel shame and guilt and they've had sin, right? Eve says, the serpent deceived me and I ate. So she did something out of a lie that was spoken to her. right? Here's the root, I think. When we lie, in whatever capacity it is, we are believing a lie. When we lie, we are believing a lie from the enemy that it will be better for us or easier for us if we'll just lie. That's at the root. When we lie, we are first believing a lie from the enemy that it will be better for us or easier for us if we just lie. We can avoid the punishment or consequences if we lie, and that will be better. Right? We can avoid being exposed or our reputation taking a hit if we lie, and that will be better for us. We can avoid letting someone down if we lie, and that will be better for us. Right? We can avoid the shame or the guilt if we lie, and that will be better for us. We can avoid the argument or the conflict, aka in marriage, if we lie, and that will be better for us. We can receive attention. We can get a promotion. We can get more money if we lie, and that will be better for us. When we lie, we are first believing a lie from the enemy that if we lie, it's going to be better for us. But the reality of that is that's not a good life plan. That's a terrible life plan. It reveals your character. It breaks the fabric of trust. It hurts people deeply. But on top of that, it is exhausting and imprisoning to cover up a web of lies in our life. It's exhausting. And on top of that, our lies ultimately will get exposed. And then it's going to be worse. Right? Proverbs 19:5 says, "A false witness will not go unpunished, and whoever pours out lies will not go free." Right, listen, you may not be caught by people telling a lie, but that does not mean you're free. It is exhausting and shame-ridden and difficult to walk in a lie, to walk in a bed of lies or a life that's a lie, right, when you don't walk in the truth. It's imprisoning and it's exhausting and it's a very difficult life to live in any way, shape, or form, even if you don't get caught. Because even if you don't get caught, you're still living in a prison. Right? That's the reality. That's why it's not a good plan. The gospel or the good news of Jesus is that we don't have to believe that lie any longer that the devil speaks to us. Right? We don't have to believe the lie. None of us have kept the ninth command perfectly. Right? All of us have been confronted or have participated in lying before. The good news is that Jesus has never lied. He obeyed the ninth command perfectly. And he sees our half-truths. He sees our misleading comments. He sees our gossip. He's seen our slander. He sees our blatant lies. He sees our hypocrisy. And he loves us the same. He sees the depths of that heart. And he loves us the same, so much so that he bore our sins on a cross, took the penalty of our sins, and he rose from the dead so that we could be forgiven. And not only forgiven, but set free with a new identity so that we don't have to lie any longer because I'm a son or a daughter of the King. I have no reason to lie now because I have a new identity now. I've been set free. Right, the reality is, or the good news is that God's word is truth, right? And the truth, the scriptures say, will set you free. Right? If you want to walk in freedom, then we bring our stuff into the light and we stop living in a web of lies, no matter if they're big lies or small lies, and we live into the freedom that comes from the Word of God. We have a new identity. We have no need to lie anymore because I've got a Father that loves me and is working on me. I don't have to impress anybody, right? It's better to walk in the will of God and get rejected than be accepted by man and walk in a lie. Right? Psalm 119, verse 160 says, "The sum of your word is truth, and every one of your righteous judgments is everlasting." Jesus says in John chapter 8, "If you hold to my teaching,